On EWTN Global Catholic Radio, you'll hear a wide variety of speakers discussing a multitude of topics, from atheism to zeal. But what are the fundamental realities that often lie hidden beneath these topics? Well, Father Thomas Dubé uncovers these very foundations on the program Bedrock Basics. Now here's Father Dubé.
Greetings. I'm Father Thomas Dubé of the Society of Mary, Maris, and I want to welcome you to our series, Bedrock Basics. And it might be well for me to say a few words about that title, though both words are clear. I have in mind realities about our human situation that are really supreme, to use another image of it. More important than who wins the World Series, or the Super Bowl, or a lottery. Much more important. I refer to realities that touch on the very core of our being on this planet. Why are we here? And that's why they're called bedrock basics. Now, at the same time, I have very much in mind to speak about things that seldom do we ever hear about. We take them for granted, and yet they are extremely important. Sometimes people think they know what the reality is, very often don't even consider it in our daily life. Let me give you one example I hope will come up someplace in the series, though I shall not speak about it today. Freedom is probably the number one value in our modern technological societies, and it's a very good thing indeed. But most people think that freedom is, well, almost exclusively a lessening of laws and regulations. That is an aspect of it, but is derivative, secondary. There's something much more important than how many laws do we have. Even though I agree with you, we shouldn't have too many. I hold that like most everybody else does. Freedom, just to say a word about it, and then I would like to say much more later in the series when we get to that subject. Freedom is not, first of all, lessening regulations. It is, first of all, a power to be and to do. For example, if there is a piano in this studio, I haven't seen one that I've noticed, I would say to you, I am not free to play the piano. You might say, what's your problem? There's no law against it. There's no rule. At least during an intermission, you may sit down and you're free to play the piano. But the fact is, I am not free to play the piano. And the basic reason is, it's the primary reason I'm not free. I'm not good enough to play a piano. By good enough, I mean I don't have the skills, I don't have the knowledge, I don't have the practice, the instruction. I cannot play a piano even though nobody is regulating against my doing it. It's first of all a power to be and to do. Therefore, a lot of things follow from what I just said, and we will trace them out. I just want to illustrate what I mean by basic. This is so basic a reality, so fundamental, rock bottom, that we are the only free beings on the planet. Nothing else is free and visible creation. It's one of our glories as human beings. And notice how we take the thing for granted. Almost everybody supposes, of course I know what freedom is. But a lot of us don't. At least we don't have the first idea clearly in mind. You see, I'm free to walk up to that piano and make a lot of clatter with it, but that's not playing a piano. And the more skilled I am and the more I know and the better I become, the more free I am to play the best of pianist compositions. Now, that being said, and I'd like to say just one other little thing about this series. Some of our bedrock basics will take us a whole program. Others will take two and possibly three. I'm not sure there'll be one quite that long, but there may be. Others will be 10 minutes. A few of them might be 2 or 3 minutes. And so it's not going to go according to size or time situation. It's going to go about according to how much needs to be said about each basic. Now, that being said, let's dive into our first bedrock basic. It is the awesome beauty of the human person. And I am not talking about beauty contests. I'm talking about the person. Even somebody who is not handsome is beautiful, as we shall be seeing. And notice, this is a subject almost never explained. It's going to take us at least one program and probably part of the next one to do this somewhat adequately. Let me start with a story. And the story is not just something a little bit funny or interesting. I think it is both of those things. At least I was amused by it. But it brings us exactly to our point. Not long ago, I was giving a kind of semi-retreat to priests. It was held at a large conference center at a big lake in northern Minnesota. And during all the morning, we dealt, as businesses do, with their business conferences at that sort of conference center. We spent on Mass, first of all, in the morning. We all celebrated Mass together, and then we had breakfast, and then we had our whole morning devoted to the subjects I was speaking about. In the restaurant of that conference center, they put several tables together where there were about 20 of us so that we could all sit at one long table. And as the week went by, I noticed there was a group of men and one woman at the table next to us. I would say maybe a half dozen men and this one woman probably in her 20s. Very perky she was. And I say that in a favorable sense. And after two or three meals, I didn't attend much to their situation, but apparently she was attending a good bit to ours. And so toward the end of one meal, she came up to the end of the table where I happened to be, not because I was there. It was near the window where we looked out on this beautiful lake. And she pulled up a chair from her table and she sat down. And she said to us, "Who are you guys?" And we told her we're Catholic priests. And she said, "You guys are really cool." And I enjoyed that immensely. I just laughed out loud. It's about the last thing I thought I ever was, though she may not have had me in mind at all. But she thought the whole group of us were very cool. And she said that two or three times. Then she told us that she is a Baptist, and she asked a couple of questions about the Catholic Church, and she was apparently happy with the answers. And then we get exactly to our point. It seemed to me practically out of the blue that she said this. And I don't know exactly why she said it. She said, "I am awesome." And I know I said immediately, because this kind of thing has been on my mind for a long time. I said, "Indeed, you are awesome." But I didn't mean she was the only one. Any human being is awesome. And that's what we're going to talk about. The splendor of the human person. In my life of academic study, teaching and writing, I have seldom come across a subject more enigmatic than what we consider in this particular program, and partially next week too. I'm quite sure we will have to bring it over to that time. It's a bedrock basic. Who are you? Why are you? What are you? And I am considering especially that last question in three ways that seldom you hear about, any one of them. Although the last one is touched on in different ways, but not exactly the way we're going to do it. It is easy to show from the physical sciences and from divine revelation that the human person is the pinnacle of visible creation. Both sciences are saying that. They call it the anthropic principle, that creation from the Big Bang on to the present moment has to be finely tuned in all sorts of ways that life can appear, and especially human life. Maybe we'll get to that at greater length further on in the series. I don't know. But we take that for granted at the moment. Great as a human person is, what is enigmatic and ambiguous about you and me is that there are two plain facts that are very hard to put together. The one fact is how great we are. As I was just saying, we're the pinnacle of visible creation, and we will talk about that shortly. Now, on the other hand, we are capable of horrendous evil that animals are not capable of. They have no free will, and that's why they can't be bad. No animal is really bad. It acts according to its instinct necessarily, you see. But we do evil because we've got free will. There's a Latin axiom that puts it well. Corruptio optimi pessima. Latin is very neat as a language. The corruption of the best is the worst. We have in our century alone, not to mention other centuries where horrendous things have occurred, we have genocide in our century, got the Holocaust, we've got scandals, public figures as well as private figures, bushels of scandals. In the daily news, it's hard to go through a half hour on TV news or look at the day's paper without crime and scandals occurring in one sort or another. For example, no mere animal executes its offspring in the womb. At least, I've never read of one who does that. That just passes by. It's so common. 4,000 per day. Now, how do you put together the splendor of the human person, which we shall be dealing with in just a moment or two? We'll start our main course here. How do you put these two things together? Because they do go together. The innate glory of the human person, which stems from the love and the beauty of the Creator. You cannot have a work of art without an artist. People would laugh at the ludicrous suggestion that Michelangelo's Pietà didn't come from Michelangelo or any artist. Just kind of blew together through atoms and molecules for billions of years sifting around through the universe, and by golly, they just gelled into the Pietà. People would laugh at that. So that the goodness in us, which is awesome, like that young perky one said, I am awesome. The goodness in us comes from an artist, of course. The evil in us comes from our free will, the abuse of our tremendous goodness, our freedom. Now, there are three ways I want to touch upon, talk about a bit, three ways in which you are splendid. Every one of you. You might be on a bed in illness. You might be at the prime of your life, physically, mentally. You might be a little baby, but the baby doesn't know what we're saying here. But the baby is also awesome. And I want to show that first with just a little brief taste from science. Then I want to show it from philosophy. And then from divine revelation. And we get more and more awesome as we go from the one level to the next to the third. Let's start with science. And here I'm going to just share with you a number of facts. There are just endless facts like this. And I find them fascinating, which is why I have loved science all my adult life. Even in my teens, I was interested in it. Because God's creation is just breathtaking in its stunning beauty. Let me give you just a few samples. Microbiologist Michael Denton made the point that one living cell, any living cell in a blade of grass, the tip of your finger, your thumb, any living cell is as complex as a large metropolitan city like New York or London. It has that one living cell, any living cell, remember, a manufacturing system. I must check my notes here so I don't forget some of these things, and I'm not even going to give you all of them. There's a manufacturing system in that cell. There's a library, storage of information, loads of information. You wouldn't believe it how much information is in one cell, as much as volumes of an encyclopedia. There's transportation system in the cell. There's computer, waste disposal systems, and a lot else. And so Michael Denton goes through in this section of his book, dealing with microbiology and its relationship to evolution, indicating that this complexity cannot happen by gradual developments. You don't make a city by gradual developments. It's got to be done with an intellect that is guiding what you're going to come up with. Anyhow, that's another subject we don't go into here. After he describes in much more detail than I have shared with you how complex that cell is, just like New York City is complex or London, he then makes the statement almost offhandedly how remarkable it is that that cell in just a short order can make another cell just like itself. And it makes them in one little tip of your finger. There are billions of cells, or at least millions. So, oh yeah, I think it would be billions. It's a huge number. And they're constantly making other ones. Imagine if you could make New York City in 3 or 4 hours. That is absolutely breathtaking. You are awesome. That's happening in your being, all over your being. Beyond number, it's happening. And no one can understand except God the marvel that begins at conception, where you have one cell, and from that one cell comes extremely different cells, like cells of your eyes, your bones, your fingernails, your lungs, and your heart. And nobody understands that. No microbiologist or biochemist understands how could that be, that this first little cell becomes all these extremely different cells to make up a human person. You are awesome. While you were in your mother's womb, and when I say you, I mean myself, I mean every single one of us, our brain was making 250,000 cells, little New York cities, per minute. That just blows my mind. If it made one per day, it would blow my mind. 6 weeks after conception, 50,000 connections were being fashioned each minute between your eyes and your brain. We've got a human baby there 6 weeks after conception. And 50,000 connections were being fashioned each minute in that baby. Between its eyes and its brain, in order that it may see and know before too many months are over. This tiny baby, 6 weeks after conception, was already using its arms to shield its eyes from the light. Now, consider your adult body right now. A science writer by the name of Mark McCutcheon has pointed out how vastly complex this body of yours is. Even if you are very sick at the moment, it's still an amazing complexity. And let me just touch rapidly what that body of yours is. It's a temple. In all of creation, we are the only ones who worship God. It's a temple, that body. It's a pharmacy. Your brain produces over 50 psychoactive drugs. It's a pharmacy. It's an electric company. There's a load of electricity in you and me, you know. It's a farm growing food. It's a mass transit system, that body of yours. And how complex. It is also a library. Your brain stores, he points out a little more exactly than I did a couple of minutes ago, information equivalent to 500 sets of Encyclopedia Britannica. That's stored in your brain. I can hardly believe it, but it's a fact. It's a utility company. It's a hospital. Your body has a self-regulating police force able to deal, says McCutcheon, with millions of microscopic criminals and terrorists aiming at destroying you. It has an army of medics and mechanics. And as he puts it, a million platelets cruise the circulatory system daily in search of wounds. You have motors, pumps, compressors, vacuums, regulators, air conditioners, furnaces, plumbing, filter, strainers, thermostats, alarm clocks, timers, and a lot more else that I am omitting. We could go on and on. Let me finish this part of You Are Awesome, Your Body, so that we can get at least to the second part in this segment. One more point about this body of yours and mine. It is commonplace in science today to point out that the human brain is the most amazing reality in the universe. The human brain. And one scientist put it this way. The brain weighs less than 3 pounds, yet a computer capable of handling a single brain's output would cover the whole Earth. It's hard to believe. The brain sorts out 100 million bits of data from the eyes, nose, and other sensory outposts each second. That is hard to believe. But these are all well-established facts. I don't think there's any doubt about them. And yet, doing all this, the brain, he concludes, uses far electricity than an average light bulb. Breathtakingly stunning. Now, we're going to turn our attention, and see if we can finish this at least today, to our immaterial aspect of our being, our soul, our intellects and our will, which have no atoms. They depend on the brain, of course, but as immaterial, they're way beyond what we can do with matter in our universe. Immeasurably greater and still more stunning is the splendor of this intellect and will of ours. And let me just touch on a few of these splendors. And they derive each one of them because we're spirit in the flesh kind of beings. No animal comes close, and I'm going to take that approach in making the point. We alone, invisible creation, write books, read books, and have libraries. You will never find giraffes and squirrels making up a library. Impossible, but we do. And that's a vast difference between us and the mere animal. As I mentioned already, we alone worship God. Ducks do not have a ducky temple. They have no idea of God whatsoever. We do. We build and use computers and telescopes. And we reach out to the very ends of the universe. And it's estimated to be about 12 billion years from our spot here on Earth to the edges of the universe. And the universe is constantly increasing at a tremendous rate of speed. And with our intellects, we get beyond this planet. We go to the very ends of the universe. Blaise Pascal, who was a mathematical genius, put the matter this way, speaking about mind and body. And you can see I wrote this little quotation down on a very small piece of paper. Says Pascal, one of the greatest mathematicians of all times, as a youngster, he was working out the theorems of Euclid by himself with some charcoal writing on the floor. And I don't think he saw a word of Euclid. Just a genius. Much more important about Pascal, he was a deeply religious man. And here's what he says about mind-body. Through space, the universe grasps and engulfs me like a pinpoint. Indeed, let me interrupt him a bit. The Earth, large as it is, compared to space, is a pinpoint. Just tiny. And you and I on Earth are still tinier. So as bodies go, we're much bigger, of course, than an insect is. But nonetheless, we are very tiny bodily. So Through space, the universe grasps and engulfs me like a pinpoint. But through thought, I can grasp it. Pascal lived in mid-17th century, and telescopes were just then beginning to be developed. And they were getting an idea of how huge the universe is, though they didn't really know nearly as well as we know now how huge it is. But notice his thought. He makes the point that in his mind, your mind and mine, you and I grasp this universe. 50 billion galaxies, each one of which on average has several billion stars in it. And we grasp that with our mind. We alone, therefore, build telescopes and get to the very ends of the universe. You will notice that lions do not raise statues to honor brave or virtuous lions. See, that comes from our spirit. We honor heroes. Fish do not sponsor an Olympics for fishy feats. Elephants do not have games, Super Bowl, where they can maul one another. We do all of these things, and I must say we've got a few more to say, which we will say in our next segment. Thank you. Bye-bye.